Well, in London, vampires out there are prowling around for new recruits as Halloween approaches. They want them to partake in parties, trips to Transylvania, bat spotting nights, coffin dwelling, blood drinking, need not apply, they say. They're not into that, but that's what they want to do, vampires. In a moment, our very special guest tonight, Brad Steiger, his work, Strange Guests. We're going to talk about the poltergeist on Coast to Coast AM. Renowned writer Brad Steiger grew up in a home where ghostly phenomena was a common occurrence. And due to this mystically inclined mother and his skeptical father, Brad believes he has achieved somewhat of a balanced attitude towards ghosts and hauntings that served him during his 50 years of a paranormal researcher. Since 1958, Steiger has been invited to dozens of private homes, office buildings, dormitories, hospitals, sacred areas to investigate hauntings and manifestations. He's our very special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Hey, Brad, welcome back.
Thanks, George. Great to be back with you.
My pleasure. You know, it's almost been a year since you were on the program with me. Way too long, Brad. We got to shorten that next
time. Yeah, we do. We do. I was thinking, you know, it's kind of every Halloween.
How
there may be
fitting.
Something symbolical there. I don't know. Maybe you know, two spooks like us get together in the night or something.
You're a renowned author, yet they highlight the fact that you're a ghost writer. Tell me a little bit about why you seem to have gotten that kind of a title.
You know, that's interesting because some people think of me as a UFO writer, you know, and
that's right.
Others think of me as the guy who writes about angels and miracles with his wife. So it's interesting. I guess it reflects the people, but I have to admit, and I have to say right up front that the ghost phenomena probably fascinates me the most because, hey, that demonstrates that there's an afterlife.
Absolutely, which is the quest, I think, for so many of us.
You know, it's the basic quest, isn't it? I mean, it's what we all want to know. And I was fortunate, and we've talked about this before, having a near-death experience when I was 11.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I was reared in an evangelical background. And it just, before that, I mean, I was 11 years old. Before that, already, I was being groomed that I would be a minister when I grew up. But that experience showed me that, well, I think it's wonderful when people get their faith and their energy from an organized religion. But that out-of-body, that death experience showed me that the important thing is that we're aware of our spiritual self. We're aware of a higher power. We're aware of helpers or guardians around us because they're there, and that's all that matters. But what I wanted to do then was to become a minister. I was even more intensified in that because I wanted to prove from the pulpit what I thought other ministers were just promising, because I had been to the other side and come back, and I was going to prove it. And then I thought, no, that's not going to work because it's going to upset all kinds of ecclesiasticisms and dogmas. And that's when I devoted my life to psychical research, to exploring and collecting evidence. Not evidence, I realize, I won't convince everybody. I'm not trying, because I'm not a missionary. I'm not trying to convince everybody. But I'm trying to lay down, in a very organized and I hope literate fashion, evidences and proofs that will appeal, I think, to those who are open and those who, now I can't say those who are rational, because someone will say, well, I'm rational and I don't accept this. But I mean,
right.
If people have an attitude of openness, and George, I know you're experiencing now with your own book that it doesn't matter the sincerity, because I know you as a very sincere individual, there will be people who will just reject what you're saying out of hand because it offends some aspect of them. And I know neither one of us wants to do that. We're just presenting what excites us and hoping that it will excite others.
Yet you can't convince everyone.
No.
You can't solve everyone's dilemma.
No.
And you know what? If you can, the way I look at it, Brad, if you can reach one person and help them, then it's worth it, because you just can't solve the problems of the world.
No, I set out. I did a terrible thing to myself, George.
What happened?
I set out as a young man, convinced that that was my mission, to prove to everyone, and that's completely wrong to do to others, and it's completely wrong to do to yourself. Now, I just simply witness. I simply share. And as you said, the people who will respond will, and those who won't, I bless them. I mean, I don't care, you know, but maybe I can entertain you with a spooky story, and maybe something will, a seed will grow. But I so desperately wanted to share this information that I had received in the near-death experience. And I thought, you know, it's real. It is real. And then, of course, as you say, I grew up in a home where I guess, you know, it's just something in my genetics or something where I saw people that other individuals didn't see. And I learned early on that I should stop saying, look, don't you see that person? Because I was frightening. I was frightening my classmates. A terrible, terrible thing. When I was a young boy in school, because I had witnessed and seen something in the boys' room and conveyed it to some friends, we had terrible accidents happening in the class because boys refused to go to the little boys' room during their break.
Yep.
And, of course, I realized then that, you know, one has to be discreet. One has to be discriminate. Well, then when I learned that I could put words together and that I could write articles and that wonderful people would actually pay me money to write these articles, but I've never, and I should. Sherry often says we should get grants, we should do something for our research, you know, to get an income that would be steady in that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I've never done. I've never charged people when I've investigated their homes. I've never charged for spiritual consultations, and neither has Sherry. I want to emphasize that.
And that makes you too a rarity. You know that.
Well, because we feel what we will do then is, with that person's permission, utilize their experience, or, you know, many people, of course, request anonymity, and we will respect that every time.
You have to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because here again, there is a matter of, well, for example, what if someone, and there have been cases where a house, simply a house, George, was possessed, where it just didn't like people. And the people, all we could do is to advise them to move. But now they couldn't put that on the market without declaring it.
Exactly. You had to disclose this
Absolutely.
Place is haunted. Yeah.
Or that would be terrible for someone else to move into that situation. So you see, there are all sorts of aspects of this that maybe people don't consider. But yes, I suppose to maybe the majority of people, I'm associated with ghosts, with that aspect of what is generally called the supernatural, but what to me is the paranormal. I'm convinced here again, I'm a cockeyed optimist, that someday we will know why an area is permeated with a haunting.
And other areas have nothing.
Yes. We will be able to read that. We'll be able to pick it up the way we pick up film now. And to me, a ghost is simply that. It is an emotion projected somehow on the environment.
And it's not just that area that may have more hauntings was an area where a lot of people died or something tragic happened.
Exactly.
That's not necessarily the case.
No, 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 no. But then I have now, and I really hate categories, but as humans, we really need them to convey concepts, don't we? We can't speak ambiguously, so ghosts, all right, I've now put them into different categories. There is what I call the ghost, and that's somehow the emotion impressed. But then I have now accepted that there are spirits, there are multidimensional entities, there are those and Sherry is excellent at this, those who are earthbound and need help progressing into the light. So there are various stages, maybe that's a better word than categories, when we talk about this ghost phenomena, because it's very wide. Now, with the poltergeist, and you've advertised it on your page, and rightly so, as perhaps the most bizarre phenomena.
Yes.
In the entire range, because it incorporates so many things, not least of which is the incredible capacity of human creativity. And when creativity is frustrated or repressed or suppressed, it can burst free. And if there is already a haunting in an area, then we have really a psychic carnival that can terrify people, that can disrupt lives, and even bring physical pain and violent acts upon individuals.
Brad, you sent us an artist's sketch of a poltergeist attack that we have up on the coasttocoastam.com website. Can you explain what that is?
Yes, this is, I made friends some years ago, about 1998. Well, we've talked about my werewolf book before.
Yes.
And
and a dandy it is.
Well, thank you. There are all kinds of people, and brothers and sisters I have now, medicine lodges around the country, Native Americans who, of course, look upon the wolf and the shapeshifter in a very different way. Maybe we can get into that later. But Wolfman Dan Allen is the name of this fantastic artist. He does comic strips and animated films and so forth. Very talented individual. When he moved into this particular home as a younger man, he was attacked. That one night, the first night, he had two big dogs with him, Cub and Bear. They left the room. There was something there. He felt it on him. Now, Dan is a very powerful man, and he felt something pressing him down. Now, he will admit, you know, he knows about sleep paralysis. He knows about that situation, those
right.
Alternate explanations. But this, he began then dimly to see this hideous face and this grotesque individual, wrinkled face of an old man, and the eyes were glowing red, and the face, you see, and he's done a good job there. It's not really solid. You see, you can kind of see through the hand as Dan is wrestling with it. And he was only saved, he feels, because Dan is in the Native American tradition of totems, that his totem, which happened to be a wolf, materialized and drove the entity away and literally saved his life.
Oh, that's
now,
fascinating.
Afterwards, then, he found out that a man had hanged himself in the house, and that many people had reported over the years a haunting and a violent haunting. Now, why we tie this into the poltergeist is because of the physical, the psychokinetic, we will say, the action where a physical force is exerted, and the physical force has also been able to combine with the human psyche and project an image of what to others would perhaps be an invisible force. That's one of the many, many things that will separate a ghost from a poltergeist. Poltergeist is German for throwing ghost or noisy ghost or racketing ghost. And it has been recorded for centuries, throwing objects around the room, smashing furniture, pushing people up against the wall, pushing people downstairs, ripping their clothes off, biting them, scratching
mischievous,
them.
Mischievous and evil, or mischievous or evil?
Now, there is the big question. And in The Strange Guest, I explore the entire range. Sometimes simply mischievous. And then sometimes combining, I think, with multidimensional entities. Maybe what we would call and have been called, George, demons down through the ages.
Right.
They weren't demons at all. They were multidimensional beings, maybe entities that never possessed a human body. But in this case, as you can see in this vivid drawing, maybe wanted to enter in and take over. And we have the range. It doesn't just happen to people who accidentally move into houses where people have hanged themselves. It can be the quietest home, the most ideal home in the suburb. It can be offices, downtown offices, stores. The poltergeist phenomena then expresses itself in violent activity, the throwing, the scratching, and the incredible phenomena of the biting, actual teeth marks appearing on people as the entity is attacking. So it's an entire range of strange phenomena. It is the most bizarre.
You know, if I'm going to get haunted, I want old Uncle Benjamin to show up as opposed to some poltergeist.
Yeah, that is absolutely right. Now, I got onto the poltergeist way back in 1965 when a man I had admired for so many years, Ivan T. Sanderson,
Very
well-known zoologist, contacted me and said, I think you're the one to write this book that I've had in mind for years on the poltergeist. Because Ivan, as a scientist, was convinced that the poltergeist phenomena would be the one from the whole field of psychical research that could convince more orthodox scientists that these phenomena are real, that they do interact, and he had an experience in Sumatra where he was sitting on the veranda and stones started coming at them as they were sitting having their after dinner drinks, and he thought it was some mischievous native boys throwing stones. and then one of the people with him, one of his hosts, said, no, he says, that's not little boys in the bushes, that's spirits. And he laughed, and Ivan said, well, I'll soon demonstrate that this is false. And a stone that came and would strike, but not hurt, just kind of bounce off them, he started marking X's on it and throwing them back into the night, into the thick jungle undergrowth, and the stones would come back, the ones he had marked. Now, this could not be, even if there were little native boys there. They couldn't find stones in the darkness, in the bushes. And then he realized he's played catch for hours then with whatever. And then he related this to poltergeist phenomena. So he said, my boy, he was a Scotsman, my boy, you're the one. I want you to do this. And he then supplied me with much of his research. And that got me started on this book.
We'll be back with Brad Steiger. Much more to come on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Brad Steiger, our guest. We're talking about his latest work called Strange Guests and his website, bradandsherry.com. How's Sherry doing, by the way, Brad? Life good?
Yes, she's doing fine. Thank you.
Great. The ghosts who hit haunted houses, are they different from poltergeists who hit people, or do poltergeists also hit haunted houses?
Yeah, that's where it becomes complex. The Nandor Fordor, Dr. Nandor Fordor, a psychoanalyst who influenced me very much in my work when I was younger, expressed it in saying that ghosts haunt houses, poltergeists haunt people. But when there is already a haunting in a house, then the poltergeist, and I think we have to define sort of the prevailing theories here. Poltergeist is most often associated with a young person going through puberty, especially a young woman.
All right.
Or with people undergoing sexual adjustment, such as newlyweds and people beginning sexual relationships. So we have that kind of psychic energy drawing. We especially the young adolescent female, so many of the cases center around, and we know how complex the female psyche is to begin with. And then that time of puberty, all those hormonal changes, everything that's happening, the body changing, everything happening. And if there is a repression, a suppression, or a frustration, that seems to feed the poltergeist energy. Now there, of course, and I chose that word deliberately, feed the energy. Whether it actually creates the poltergeist or gives the poltergeist energy, I suppose we could discuss, you know, for hours.
Sure.
It could be kind of the, you know, the chicken and the egg kind of situation. But at any rate, there is a center. There is a focus for the poltergeist phenomena. Generally, it centers around the young person or the person going through the sexual adjustment. And the phenomena, the flying objects, whether it be knives or forks, will probably be directed at the center of the poltergeist phenomena, but never hurt the individual. The objects will, even stones, I say, and knives will simply touch and drop. Now, the interesting thing, and I've discussed this with many individuals who have pursued the poltergeist, and yeah, in my own situation where I've seen, you never see the object being launched. As try as you might in the film, you never see it being launched. You simply see it while it's in the air and while it strikes. But that's the strange thing. We just never seem to catch when it happens.
Interesting.
So, okay, we have then the young person primarily or someone going through sexual adjustment.
Now, who's the victim, right?
Yeah, we can't. That becomes almost impossible to define. Now, superficially, it's easy to say, well, it's the young person being afflicted, but it's not really being afflicted because, and I suspect, no way I can prove this, of course, I suspect on one level of consciousness, that person somehow is aware that there is an aspect of his or herself that is, if not controlling, at least inspiring the movement of the poltergeist. Now, the poltergeist activity can be incredible, you know, overturning furniture, levitating people. When you see The Exorcist, that great movie, that could be a poltergeist phenomenon.
Right. Now, that seemed evil to me.
Yes. And then we have those cases, George, where we just have to say that is an evil entity that I think, here again now, no way I can prove this, of course, I think feeds off that energy of sexual dynamics and uses that powerful energy to create these manifestations. Now, we have many. I've been fascinated for years by the Bell Witch, and that is really the mother of American hauntings. That's the Roswell of ghost phenomena, poltergeist phenomena. The Bell Witch, which took place, going back in time now, 1817 to 1820 in Tennessee, Clarksville, Tennessee, in the cabin. And I think a lot of people have heard about this case.
Right.
But again, the number of witnesses, even if people say, well, that was a long time ago, but the number of witnesses and the caliber of the witnesses, including President Andrew Jackson, He said he'd rather face, you know, the British at New Orleans again than to go up against the Bell Witch.
Well, how did he get involved in this?
He got involved because John Bell had helped him with some of his political work.
Okay.
Locally in Tennessee. He had left the presidency, and he was living there, and he felt he owed John. John had become a good friend of his and helped him in his political career. So he heard about the terrible business going on at John Bell's place. So he set out with a lot of his Tennessee boys, rugged guys. As they approached the Bell farm, they had, of course, a number of wagons with their supplies and so forth. They heard a cackling in the bushes, and one of the men said, "What in the world is that?" And the Bell Witch said, "You cannot come without my permission." This voice, without a body, speaks to them and stops all the wagons. It didn't make any difference how they whipped the horses, how they goaded the horses. They could not, the wheels would not budge until they asked permission of this dematerialized entity that this voice speaking. Well, there are a couple of country preachers along with Andy Jackson who were really going to take care of the Bell Witch that night, and they left screaming. This was an interesting thing. This was a violent physical. One of the friends of the Bell was known as the rough and tumble wrestler, and he was said Betsy, the center, the focus of the haunting, 12-year-old girl. He said, "I'll protect you, Betsy. I'll take it on." And the Bell Witch slapped him and just beat the stuffing out of him, made him beg for mercy. Now, interestingly, and we have a case that we can follow, a progression we can follow in many cases. It seems to me, and this really is eerie, George, that it's like an entity being born. Because when the poltergeist starts, when it's in a home, first you hear raps on the wall, then you hear scratches. And then maybe, like, the tugging of bedclothes.
And this is over days or right away?
Yeah, over days.
Over days.
And then you hear a sucking sound, like lips smacking.
Yeah.
And then a progression. And then sometimes, if the phenomena stays long enough, it develops a voice. It develops what seems to be an independent intelligence that can converse. Now, in the Bell Witch, it would give enormous conversations with the clergyman. It's a fascinating case, and it's replicated again and again. We have, I often tease people when they say, what founders, what strong Christian founders of a major Protestant body suffered poltergeist phenomena when they were children? And, of course, it's the Wesleys.
Yes.
I mean, the whole Epworth Rectory was afflicted with poltergeist phenomena, with the materialization of entities, one grotesque kind of ape-like being that all the children saw. And as much as the father would defy the demon, well, and there's an instance. The cases, I was called in on one case by the police, and a Baptist minister had gone there to do an exorcism. The dirty laundry in the basket became animated, went over the minister's head, dumped the dirty laundry, and then the broom whacked him around the room as he ran around the room. So simply saying, showing the crucifix or saying a prayer doesn't necessarily work with the poltergeist.
Seems to be a control thing, too, with a poltergeist.
Yeah.
They're into this.
But again, you see, if it were, let's say, a young person or someone going through repression, already repressed, and bursting the psychokinetic energy, then the last thing it wants is to be preached at, the last thing it wants to hear. So again, it will react against admonitions of "be gone, Satan," and "evil being," and so forth. It's going to, "well, I'll show you. You want evil? Take this, buddy."
Let's get back to Bell Witch, if we can, just for the rest of this hour, and then there's more to talk with you about next hour, Brad. When Jackson was part of this, was he the president at the time?
No, he was not the president at
the
time.
All right, so these Tennesseans go into this area where the Bell Witch is. This cackle, female voice?
female voice. Now, here's the thing. There's a movie out now, Sissy Spacek and Donald Sutherland, called American Haunting. And unfortunately distorts, is not very accurate at all. It starts off pretty good, but for one thing, Kate Batts, it's supposed to be the old witch Kate Batts, the witch, Kate Batts was deceased and was already kind of a local legend, you know, this haunting. So whether it was, I don't think Kate Batts, I don't think her spirit, I don't think the entity had anything to do with it. I think this was a situation of guilt and progression. Dr. Fordor, doing psychoanalysis far removed from the scene, suggested that there may have been molestation with John Bell and Betsy. And this is always heralded, and of course it usually, and they even use it in the movie, the only time that a ghost killed someone. John Bell was killed by the entity, but murdered. What happened was his medicine was a poison was substituted for his medicine. So the witch did, the ghost, I'm saying witch now, poltergeist, we're doing a slash there, was responsible for John Bell's death. And during the funeral, cackled, sang body songs, gave curses, how happy John Bell was dead. Now, the Bell Witch stayed around. The Bell Witch, some people tell me, and they send me pictures from the Bell Witch cave showing a very strange kind of phenomena going on there. And the Bell Witch made predictions. The Bell Witch predicted such things as World War II. And remember, jeez, this is in 1820, predicted the Civil War. Many things. It's a fascinating, fascinating case. The materialization is so, this is now in the 1820s, and Mother Bell liked bananas. Well, how often do you get bananas in Tennessee in 1820? And the witch would say, well, I'll pick some for you. I'll go to the West Indies and pick some for you. And within just a few moments, bananas would drop out of the ceiling into the mother's lap. She liked hazelnuts. Hazelnuts would materialize, and then in front of all of them, the nuts would be cracked, so the meat was available for the mother. So the mother fared very well. The father and Betsy were the objects. The fiancé of Betsy was driven completely out, and as I say, Andrew Jackson and his Tennessee frontiersmen, they tried to take it on, and they left the next morning. I mean, they said that, and as I say, that is an actual quote from Andrew Jackson saying, I'd rather take on the British again at New Orleans than to go up against the Bell Witch.
That's incredible. Scary as all heck, Brad.
Yeah, scary as all heck. Good for Halloween, right?
Good for any time of the year, but you're right. You're right about that. And did they ever find out why? What caused all this?
You know, this is what I've said to people, and again, I don't suppose I can't be dogmatic about any of this. You know as well as I do, George. Anyone who tells you they have the answer, I mean, I don't want to sit beside them on a long bus ride because
I understand. Yeah.
There are no experts in this field. There are no experts. We're all learning. But what I have found in the that's the operative word there, poltergeist case that I've investigated will run itself out in about 2 weeks. And that's why I've told police, I've told other people, you know, just console. I'm pretty certain this young person is the center. Console him, see what's really troubling him or her, and I think it will dissipate. But then I have gone to houses where the phenomena has, I mean, the most incredible phenomena, and then it has been going on for months. It's been going on for years, and it's extraordinary when you see these things or feel these things for yourself. I mean, you feel like you've stepped into a surrealistic dimension. And I'm not easily frightened. I've been doing this, you know, and as I've seen spirits since I was a little boy. But there is one particular house that I will admit, I still will sometimes have bad dreams about it. I mean, there was such a force there. There was such an energy. There have been a couple houses like that, and then the one where, you know, that really gave me my alteration of reality, my epiphany, of course, is when they, when the entity picked us up, you know, and dropped us. And that you have to say now we're dealing with an intelligence. This is not some phenomena. This is not a simply psychic residue. There's something here. There's a force, and there is an intelligent force that can interact with us. And that's, that to me is what was frightening when I came to that realization. Before, when I was just kind of going through what I thought, you know, was the handy-dandy, helping people come to cope with hauntings in their homes. And then the realization that there actually is a force, there is an intelligence, there are intelligences that probably don't respect, doesn't make any difference how many books we've read or how smart we think we are, they don't respect us very much. And we have to be on guard. We really have to. That's why I, you know, I hear from so many, God bless them. It seems like every town over 500 population has a ghost-busting society now. And it, I talk to some of them, and they're well-prepared. Some, you know, have read two books, seen a special on the Discovery Channel, and they feel they're ghostbusters. I mean, it takes years of research and study and discretion. And you have to really know what you're up against, because some people can be hurt. Some people can be hurt.
Would you go up against a poltergeist at any time?
Well, since we have, I'm better prepared than I was the first time. And yes, I mean, I want to help people. And as I say, that's why I've become involved in these cases in the past, because people needed help. They were terrified. They felt demon was, you know, disrupting their lives, capturing their soul. So, I mean, you know, you have to respond to that, and you have to respond by being as helpful, as loving as you can, and to guide people through this until the energy dissipates.
All right, stay with us. More to come with Brad Steiger on Coast to Coast AM.